Okay, good morning, everyone. It's I think that one of the incredible things about this trip is that each and every place we go elicits different emotions, elicits a different response, and brings out a different dimension of spirituality for each of us. I feel very overwhelmed to be in this place. I have the great schos in my shul back in Baltimore to give a daf yomi shir every morning. And in our shul, we're finishing out our second cycle of daf yomi. We begin at 5:45 in the morning with a Musar Seder Mesilas Yesharim, and then from 6 to 6:45 we learn the daf. And when you look at our daf yomi shir, as I'm sure it's representative of many daf yomi shiurim, we have literally, as they say, mina katza ala katza, from one end of the spectrum to the other end of the spectrum of Jews. There are individuals who grew up in the yeshiva system, who know how to learn Gemara, who don't need a shir to be able to do the daf yomi, but like coming to the shir because it forces them to keep a consistency. And then we have other people who have never picked up a Gemara before starting this latest daf yomi cycle. And everyone is sitting together. In fact, I'll tell you something amazing. In our last daf yomi cycle, the last siyum, we're about to finish Shas in Meretz Hashem this coming January. In the last daf yomi siyum, we had an individual in our shul. His name was Simor Beik, Sai Beik, Zichrono Livracha. And he started the daf when he was 71 years old. And before the age of 71, he had never opened up a Gemara. He didn't have the benefit of a yeshiva background, a Jewish education. He spent his younger years working, always running around, never opened up a Gemara until the age of 71. He was Mesayim Shas. He finished the entire Babylonian Talmud with our shir, and he passed away 2 months later. A simple Jew who finished the entire Babylonian Talmud. Now that is a feat, so you have to understand, finishing Shas usually is an accomplishment that's reserved for Torah scholars. It's reserved for the intellectually elite, for the intellectual elite. But what Rameir Shapira Zecher Tzadik Livracha did was create a system that allowed Torah to be accessible to everyone. Now the truth is, we're privileged to live in a time with art scroll, with Koren, with, what's the name of that? Sefaria, right? Pretty much, you could be totally illiterate. You cannot even know how to read one word of Hebrew. And you have the ability to finish the entire Shas. The ability to go ahead and achieve this incredible crown jewel of Torah accomplishment. But the truth is, this process, as he said so beautifully before, he spoke about it with the vocational schools. But Rameir Shapira wasn't just about keeping non-Talmidei Chachamim in the yeshiva system. Rameir Shapira also believed that somehow, someway, we have to keep Torah accessible to all Jews. But not only that. You see, something amazing happened in the world of Torah. Is that if we look back, you know, it's interesting. Sometimes when we think about European Jewry before the war, so we kind of think that that was like Yiddishkeit, that was Judaism in its heyday. We often have a proclivity or sometimes just a predisposition to rewrite history a little bit. We think everybody was Shomer Shabbos, everybody was pious, everybody was frum, everybody in their spare moment was saying Tehillim and learning Mishnayos. Remember again, it's not true. Most people were utterly ignorant. Utterly ignorant. We live in a Tzor. Meir Shapira also had to understand, how do you bring Torah to the masses? But understand, because most people were ignorant, understand what happened in most communities. There were haves and have-nots. There were people who knew Torah, and there were people who did not. There were people who were accomplished in their learning, and there were people who were not. And this created very much a chasm. This created separation within the community. There were the Talmidei Chachamim, the Torah scholars, and there was everyone else. The beauty of our Torah is that it is a koach ha-ma'achit. It is a glue to bring Klal Yisrael together. We all have the same Torah. It's true. We may have different levels of observance. We may have different levels of relating to different mitzvos. Some of us may be a little bit more meticulous in one area than another, but it's the same exact Torah. What has kept Klal Yisrael together throughout all of the ages? What's created them? I said it yesterday. I forgot the part that'll come to me in just a moment. Torah is the great glue which sustains our people. So I want to read to you something amazing. Remeir Shapira, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, spoke at the Knesset Gedola, the Agudas Yisrael. Remember, Agudas Yisrael held a convention. So in their convention on August 21st, 1923, they invited the Lublina Rav to speak. Now understand, this was dramatic on a variety of levels, right? In general, right, when you go, when you look at the speakers, or at least historically, when you looked at the speakers at the Aguda convention, these were wise, elderly statesmen. Remeir Shapira was a young man. He passed away at the age of 46. He was a young man. He was the youngest speaker at the Knesset Agudah, at the convention of the Aguda. And he gets up, and I want to read to you, it's a Hebrew transcription of his words. I'm going to read this to you. Im kol beis yisra b'chol asr v'asr yilamdu ba'osa yom. Oso daf gemara. So this is where Remeir Shapira, it was interesting, Tzvit said that Gur was learning the daf beforehand. I never heard that before. I heard that the Ger Rebbe was one of the greatest supporters of the daf yomi, together with Remeir Shapira's Rebbe, the chart cover Rebbe. I didn't know they were learning it before. But here Remeir Shapira says, I have a wild idea. Imagine if everyone gets together and learns the same daf, the same page of Gemara. Hayesh lecha bitui mukhshi yosel li'ichod ha'elyon be'kutshabrichu oraisev Yisrael. Is there anything greater to serve as the glue between the Jewish people, Torah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Listen to what he writes. Noseh lo Yehudi v'tachas beis shechyo maseches brachas. Imagine a Jew walks through the streets and what does he have tucked under his arm? He has Maseches Brachos, the first tractate in the Talmud. Noseu shvu'ayim min Yisrael li'artzos habris. Imagine he travels for 2 weeks from Eretz Yisrael to America. Lebasof kishu omed al admas artzos habris nichnasu lebeis hamedrash. And imagine the scene, what happens? An Eretz Yisrael Jew travels the seas and comes into America. He walks into the Beis Medrash. So in the Beis Medrash, you walk in and there's a shir going on. The shir is great if you know what topic they're learning, if you know the Rebbe. But imagine he walks in, and what happens? Umotse Yehudim oskim ba'ol sadaf shebo amad hayom. Mitztarif lelomdim dechedva. Imagine the Eretz Yisrael Jew walks into a Beis Medrash in America. He doesn't speak the language. He doesn't know the culture, but he walks in and he finds that they're learning the same exact page of Gemara. The same page. He says, he joins his fellow learners with incredible joy. They speak in learning. Says Remeir Shapira, imagine if we could literally get all of Klal Yisrael on the same page. Literally get all of Klal Yisrael on the same page. And understand the greatness of this idea. You know, my Rebbe said, I often said this idea, that the Pasuk says that when Klal Yisrael came to Har Sinai, the Jewish people came to Mount Sinai, says, Vayichan Yisrael Sham Neged Ahar. The Jewish people encamped opposite the mountain. And it uses a singular wording, Vayichan, he camped. And Rashi says, Ki ish echad b'lev echad. One people with one heart. Merelli always said, it doesn't say one people with one opinion. Why not? Good, you know. Never happened and never will be. Our aspiration, our national aspiration, is not that we should all agree. We don't agree. We have never agreed. And we will never all agree on something. That is absolutely sure. But there's a way to get on the same page. Even if we don't agree in matters of halacha, in matters of hashkafa, in matters of politics. And the Remeir Shapira said, let's at least try to get the Jewish people on the same page, the same blot of Gemara together. Imagine the achdus. Imagine the unity it creates, and anyone who learns the daf knows this unfolds every single day. Whenever I give my shiur in the morning, I look out and I have to hold back laughter. Why? Because in front of me, Baruch Hashem, we have a large shiur. You know, certainly in the Moed Masechtas, even Nash Masechtas and Ezekiel Masechtas, we could have 75 people, Baruch Hashem, in the morning. And there are people who, I want to tell you something, there are people who outside of a Daf Yomi shiur would have nothing to do with each other. They travel in different social circles, they have different levels of frumkeit, and chances are they would not be interacting with each other on a social level, because a lot of times that's the way our communities work. You associate with your own. I'm not condoning it. I think we have to break out of that. But that's just human nature. We associate with our own. And here all of the chevra is sitting together around one piece of Gemara. The Lublino Rav was successful. He was able to get Klal Yisrael literally on the same page. And then, of course, the famous story becomes that on that Rosh Hashanah, it was the Ger Rebbe after Ma'ariv, he made a clap, went to the Beis Medrash, and began Daf Beis Amud Aleph in Maseches Berachos. The Hasidim saw that the Ger Rebbe did this, and this sparked a learning revolution for the Jewish people. Rebbe Meir Shapira said, "Where did I get this idea to learn the Daf from?" So I want to quote to you. He quoted the Gemara, a beautiful Gemara, Maseches Yevamos. And the Gemara said, I'm just going to paraphrase it for you. Rabbi Gamliel said, one time I was traveling. I was traveling by boat. And I saw there was another group of people traveling by boat. And that boat was smashed by the stormy waters, by the tumultuous waves, smashed apart into pieces. And I knew on the second boat that was broken apart by the vicious waves that there was a great Torah scholar. And I was so saddened because that Torah scholar clearly died. He must have drowned in the waves. Who was the Torah scholar who was on the boat which broke apart? Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Gamliel says something amazing. Ukishalisi biyavasha, I came onto dry land. I was sitting in the Beis Medrash. And who walked into the Beis Medrash? Who walked in? None other than Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Gamliel said, Rabbi Akiva, bless you, how did you survive? I saw your boat break apart. I saw your boat smashed by the overwhelming waves. How were you able to survive? And he says, Amar li, Rabbi Akiva responded, listen to these words. Daf shel Sfina nizdamein li. Now literally what it means, a daf means a board. Rabbi Akiva said the boat splintered apart. I held onto the board and I floated to shore. The Lublino Rav said so beautifully that the world is filled with tumultuous waters. Life is filled with tumultuous waters. And those waters, those challenges, those difficulties will capsize your boat unless you find something to hold on to. Unless you find something to keep you afloat. And said the Lublino Rav, there's only one thing that keeps the Jew afloat, and that's Torah. And more specifically, said the Lublino Rav, the one thing that keeps the Jew afloat is the daf. Learn a blot of Gemara a day, and it will not solve all of your problems, but it will give you a different perspective. You know, my friends, the beauty of Torah, people sometimes think a little bit childishly that if you do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of you, everything in life will be okay. There are no guarantees and no promises that life will be okay. In fact, the one thing you could count on in life is adversity and challenge. Well, if that's the case, then what does Torah give me? Everyone knows that when you learn Torah, you feel like a different person. When you learn Torah, you see the world through a different set of eyes. When you learn Torah, you are able to keep your head above the waves and somehow maintain proper perspective, no matter how acute or how overwhelming your life situation may be. Rabbi Akiva said, and this is Rabbi Akiva, we're not going to go into this now, I don't want to spend time on this, but who's Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva lives during the times when the darkest times of persecution, Hadrianic persecution, he's killed in such a brutal way. Rabbi Akiva says, the difficult waters of life are looking to drown me and overtake me. And what's the only thing which keeps me afloat? The only thing is the Daf Shel Sfina. The daf keeps me afloat. The Lublina Rav understood this and instituted this incredible practice of Daf Yomi, which I will tell you that I know from personal experience that the Daf keeps people afloat. People whose lives are unraveling, people whose circumstances are unraveling. The consistency and the buoyancy of the Daf allows people to keep their head above water and maintain perspective even in the most difficult of times. Where did the Lublina Rav get this idea from besides this Gemara? With this, I'll conclude before we make a siyum. One of my favorite ideas, the Lublina Rav, that he brings down in Imrei Das, is he comments on an episode in the beginning of Chumash Shmos. The Pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu was born, his mother can't hide him anymore in the home, and she sets him afloat on the Nile. An incredible confluence of events. Bas Paro, the daughter of Paro, is bathing on the Nile, and what does the Pasuk say? She sees the little basket, Vatishlach es amasa, Vatikachel. Vatishlach es amasa. So Pasha Shap, the simple meaning of the Pasuk is, who did she send? She sent her maidservant to go and fetch the basket. Rashi HaKadosh quotes the beautiful Medrash, which said, actually, it's Gemara Masechet Sota. What happened? A miracle. What was the miracle? Her hand stretched out. She couldn't reach the basket, her hand stretched out. And the Lublina Rav asks such a simple question. It's such an... We all know this Gemara. We all know this statement of Rashi. Know this Gemara. Miracle happened, her hand extended. What's the obvious question on this Gemara? The obvious question. What's the not-so-obvious question? I don't understand. If she needed a miracle, what does that mean? What does that mean? It was clearly out of reach. It was clearly out of reach. I mean, it's not just a miracle. You could see just by doing a simple ocular intake, right? You could see what's within your reach and what's out of your reach. Obviously, if she needed this miracle, the basket was out of reach. So ask the Lublina Rav, Bas Paro, daughter of Pharaoh, if the basket is out of reach, then why are you even trying? Why did you extend your hand in the first place? To which the Lublina Rav says, because life is all about reaching for things that are outside of your current grasp. Life is all about reaching for things that you don't know how you're going to grab it. You don't know how you're going to get it. But I know that I have to try. Bas Paro saw a basket. She figured out there was a baby in the basket. I guarantee you, Moshe Rabbeinu's basket. Yocheved wasn't the only mother who had this idea. The Nile must have been clogged with baskets. Bas Paro, there was a Jewish child in there. She said, I need to reach out to do my part. And sometimes where our effort ends is where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where God begins. Stretch out your hands. Reach for things that you think are beyond your current capabilities. The Lublina Rav said this concept many times. He said, you know, if you make goals that are within reach, then you are an underachiever. If you make goals that are too far out of reach, then you're not a realist. Life is about creating goals that are not within your current reach, but just a little bit beyond. And know that if you stretch out your hand and it's for something meaningful and good, you do your part, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do his in extending your reach. That's the miracle of Aspara. But this was the Lublina Rav's entire approach to life. As you heard so beautifully from Tzvi, I'm in the middle of a building campaign, and I walk into a building like this, and I don't know how the Lublina, maybe Lublina Rav came to America, maybe I should come to Lublin, we'll have to see if that works out. Hey, it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. And for when a person is a Rav and a Rosh Yeshiva, all the other responsibilities don't stop. Fundraising is another responsibility. He needed 6 floors. Why don't you make a nice little shtiebel? Why don't you start small? No, because Lublina Rav understood. You have to stretch. You just have to stretch. And how many people told the Lublina Rav, impossible? And by the way, not just about this building. You know how many people came over to the Lublina Rav after his speech at the Knesset Gedola and told him, Lublina Rav, such a nice idea. Listen, you're a little wet behind the ears. You're a young man. Calm down. Calm down. Nice aspiration, nice idea, never gonna happen. For every beautiful idea, There are 50,000 people who are there to tell you it's never going to work. And I guarantee you, they formed a line and queue around the Lubliner Rav to tell him why the idea was flawed and why it was never going to work. Just like how many donor meetings did he have about this yeshiva who said, come on, be a little bit more realistic. But the Lubliner Rav understood the model of Bas Paro. You got to reach. Life is all about reaching. Life is all about trying to catch those things, get those things that you have no idea how you're going to make it happen, but somehow, some way, you have to try. This was the Lubliner Rav. And so I want to conclude. We just finished in Daf Yomi, where today's Daf is Maseches Tumur Daf Vav. We're not going to do the Daf today because I don't know that everybody here learns the Daf, but what we will do, Amir Sashem, is we had the great Zchus to be Messiah Maseches Erchin this past Shabbos. So Amir Sashem, you'll join me, we'll make the Siyum in Maseches Erchin to understand what an incredible Zchus, what an incredible privilege. First of all, as someone who gets to give the daf and as someone who gets to learn the daf, to be able to Messiah, Meseches Erchin, and Meseches Kachim in the very place which birthed this idea, in the very place which was the personification of the Lubliner Rav's ideas and ideals of always you reaching beyond this. You know, for those who learn the daf, if you would ask anyone in my shir, ask some of the chevra, whoever thought they'd be Messiah, Meseches Erchin. Erchin, I want to tell you, is not one of those mesektos that most people say, hey, let's go learn Erchin, right? In fact, again, when it comes to Daf Yomi, no one likes to admit it. When we get to Erchin, sometimes there's an audible gap. Oh, Erchin. And yet when you get into it, you see the beautiful, beautiful gemaras, the beautiful ideas. Because what the Lubliner Rav did is he connected us with the orphaned mesektos. There's a lot of mesektos that traditionally gathered much dust on the bookshelves of great Jews throughout the generations, because they didn't contain the halacha l'maaseh, the practical teachings, or the riveting agadotas, the riveting homiletic lessons. And the Lubliner Rav says it doesn't make a difference. If it's part of Gemara, you have to learn your blot. And how many Jews finished Maseches Erchin this past Shabbos who would have never, ever opened, let alone finished Maseches Erchin, without the Lubliner Rav? And with that, we'll conclude. The final Gemara of Maseches Erchin discusses the concept of a Kohen who is makdish his steicherem. Without getting into all the technicalities, steicherem is a concept of the Yisrof, and if a regular Yisrof, a regular Jew, goes ahead and is makdish, consecrates his steachuzah, his ancestral land. So the halacha is it becomes the property of the Beis HaMikdash. If he fails to redeem it until the Yovel year, it becomes initially at first property of the Beis HaMikdash, but then is subsequently divided up amongst the Kohanim of the Mishmar when Yovel occurs. So the Gemara discusses over here what happens if a Kohen gets that field from the Beis HaMikdash, it's called the Steachirim, and he subsequently goes ahead and is makdish it. He consecrates it. So the question the Gemara deals with is the Kohen permitted to keep that field? Because after all, if he acquires other consecrated fields, he certainly should be able to retain his own consecrated field. Or do we say no, that field is treated like any other consecrated field, goes back to the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore again, when Yovel comes, is divided up amongst the different group of Kohanim. And the Gemara says at the end of the day, Kamash Molan Achuzoso, Achuzoso in Chermo Lo. To which the Gemara says no. The only halacha to which this applies is an achuza. Only the concept that a Kohen has the ability to go ahead and redeem a piece of property forever is only his own personal property. But property that he received as a cherem, property that he received from a chalukah, from a division of the Beis HaMikdash, goes back, if he's makdish, if he consecrates it, it goes back to the Beis HaMikdash, he no longer retains any rights over it, and when Yovel comes, it is divided amongst a new group of Kohanim. Hadron Allah HaMolcher Sadeu Uslik Alon Meseches Erchin. Hadron Allah Meseches Erchin V'Hadrach Alon. Datan Allah Meseches Erchin V'Datan Alon. V'Datach Alon. Nisne Sheminach Meseches Erchin V'Lo Tisne Sheminon Lo Ba'amadei V'Lo Ba'amadasi. Hadron Allah Meseches Erchin V'Hadrach Alon. Datan Allah Meseches Erchin V'Datach Alon. Lo Nisne Sheminach Meseches Erchin V'Lo Tisne Sheminon Lo Ba'amadei V'Lo Ba'amadasi. Hadron Allah Meseches Erchin V'Hadrach Alon. Datan Allah Meseches Erchin V'Datach Alon. Lo Nisne Sheminach Meseches Erchin V'Lo Tisne Sheminon Lo Ba'amadei V'Lo Ba'amadasi. Yirat Samo Panach Adonai Elohim Yevolei Avosinu. Shetei Toras Kho Minosinu Ba'olam Hazeh Utehei Manu Li'olam Haba. Chanina Bar Papa, Rami Bar Papa, Nachma Bar Papa, Achai Bar Papa, Abba Mari Bar Papa, Rafa Bar Papa, Rachish Bar Papa, Surcher Bar Papa, Adar Bar Papa, Dara Bar Papa.
Yeah. There's even doubly so when you deal with Yeshiva Chachamei Lublin. Meir Shapiro, of course, was Nifta, as you know, died at a very young age. Talmidim praying for him, begging wasn't to be the case. But Meir Shapiro will die in a very dark age, a very dark time in Europe. He'll die at the same time as so many of our great rabbis will die, where he wanted the dark age that was going to be coming upon the Jewish people that he didn't want to see. Didn't want to be around to see the terrible suffering of the Jewish people. When the Nazis came in here, the Nazis came into this place over here. They took out every book from him. Thankfully, it was right at the beginning of Shkolas Elul, as you know, the beginning of the new term, if you wanted the yeshiva. Many of the yeshiva students hadn't managed to get back here in time, and many of them turned away, around on the way, realizing the Germans had invaded Poland. They were coming from other countries and coming dry. So many of them were saved from that perspective, seeing their yeshiva, if you want, being destroyed from their eyes. The Germans take all the spies, all the books out of here, all these are new. And next week, we've got the privilege of dedicating a new shas here to the library that's specifically going here. Steinsaltz is a corridor that is the shas we're taking for next week. So, took all the spies out and they burned them in the main square in Lublin. It took 20 hours to burn the books. 20 hours. They asked the Jews to sing. The Jews sang. They couldn't stop them singing. So they brought in a brass band to finish them off. To over, if you want, make their noise louder than the noise of the Jews that were singing at the time. They were singing, they were waving. Because they said in their song, "We will beat you. We will overcome." When you roll the whole story forward, what took place in this yeshiva, and the power that came out of this yeshiva, and what Meir Shapiro wanted to teach to us, something incredible happens a number of years later. A number of years later, the first chief rabbi of Israel, who's the archbishop this week, last week, excuse me, was Rav Herzog. Another man came out of Ireland. Incredible, incredible talent for God. And Rav Herzog was Nifta. After a shiver, he was visited by a number of rabbanim. One of them was Rav Ariskin from America at the time, but lived in Israel by then. And she came out, okay, to give him some drinks and whatever, and to say thank you for coming. And then she brought out a book, and the book was very old. It was very tattered. It was a very tattered book. I looked at it. It was the Sefer Pesachim, the tractate of Pesachim. Thought, okay, I've seen an old book in my life. And she turns to Rav Ariskin and says, look at the book. She says, yeah, it's very interesting. It's old, where's it from? And he opened it up to see where it was printed. Didn't think too much about it. She says, that's what my husband said as well. When he was given the book, he looked at it, looked where it was printed. He's seen old books in his life. Well, they're mad. Okay, very nice. But now you need to understand the story behind it. When Rav Herzog went on a delegation from Israel to Germany, as you know, they all give presents to each other. They gave menorah to the Germans, and the German gave him a present. The present they gave him was old book. Rav Herzog opened it up, looked at it, says, "You think it's any old book, don't you?" It's not any old book. This book, this Talmud, this Sechet of Pesachim, of Pesach, freedom, deals with all the covenant of Pesach. Deals with the idea of Pesachim or Pesach, what we're about, you know, when we talk about this idea of the wonderful Chag that we have, was found in Hitler's inner chamber. We all know, and you heard yesterday from the son-in-law, and he tells me in one of his testimonies, he says when the Germans entered into his house, Peter's house, they saw a set of Talmud on the wall there, okay, on the bookshelf. They went nuts, tore it to pieces, threw it out the window. The Germans understood the power of Jewish learning. and they knew they could try and break the Jew, but if they don't get rid of the Jewish books, and they don't burn them, and they don't get rid of everything that we hold dear, they'll never destroy the Jew. At least that's what they thought. The book that you're holding, Rabbi Herzl was told, and now Rav Riskin was told, is the book that was in the inner chamber of Hitler. He took the last remnants in with him to destroy it, to hide this from him. When Rav Riskin went to Berlin afterwards to visit his shtichim that were in Berlin, he walked around the Holocaust Memorial in Berlin. And those of you that have been there, if you ever go there, you'll walk around this maze of blocks. And when you walk in there and you take out the leaflet at the end, there's a number on the end. He thought to himself, I know that number. What is that number of the amount of blocks that there are? And then he put two and two together. Every block that is at the Holocaust Memorial in the centre of Berlin is for one page at a time. There are 2,733, is it? If I'm not mistaken. Blocks that are there, one for every page of the Talmud. They understood it. We have to understand the power that we have in our hands and what we're able to do and to rebuild and to redo what we just did now here in Shvat. The beauty of Jewish learning. And for all of us, you know, thank God many of us are involved in a lot of Jewish learning, but it's out there today and it's for the people that we meet who may not be connected so much, it's inexcusable today. Because it's out there in every language. You can't say, I don't understand this, that's fair enough. I've got it in English. I've got it in Russian, I've got it in French, I've got it in Spanish, I've got it in everything. Just like we love to excel in one way, making sure that we're the best this, best that, we have to excel in our Torah learning as well. And that's one of the things that Meir Shapir wanted to be able to say here. Meir Shapir was an incredible, incredible songwriter as well. I think for the last Siyam Adaf, Suki and Ding, if you remember, they brought out that CD, okay, of his songs. And one of the songs that he sang is connected to what we just spoke about, the burning of the books. And I want you to think about this for what we're about to do. When we leave the yeshiva after lunch, we're going to head down the road to Majdanek. Many of us have never heard of Kalmna, but we've all heard of Majdanek. Place where they wanted to destroy the Jewish people. After Aleinu, in our Siddurim, it says four little lines, okay, and three little lines, excuse me, and there's usually sometimes in italics or smaller, and one of them says, "Butzu etzav butzifar davu davu v'loya kumki imanukem." Go ahead, you find yourself any type of evil counsel. Get yourself a Goring, find yourself a Himmler, find yourself a Hess. You go ahead, get anyone you want. Double, double, you can make the plans, draw them all up, draw them out, build what you want to build. Go ahead, build Chalmna, build Majdanek, build whatever you want. Lo yakum, it's not going to work. Why? Ki imanukel, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes with us. You messing with the wrong people, says Meir Shapir. And that song that Chabad sing today was devised in this yeshiva, which they sing every single day after their tefillah, of Utsu Eitzav Utifah. Like I told you at the beginning when we started our journey, there will be times where you're going to be in the deepest, darkest places. And could you be in a morgue dark place yesterday? Yeah, today. Okay, you could be in a more dark place. Picking up bones from the floor, burying them again. Standing in a train carriage, knowing what happened to those people who got on the train carriage. Standing in a place like Majdanek that will be in Auschwitz that will be in tomorrow. Know all the time that even in the darkest places, you can take whoever you want. It's never going to work. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with the Jewish people. He stands by his people. Take our Talmud and put it in a locked up room. We will bring it back out and bring the light back to it. You have to remember what Meir Shapir was saying. And when he was Nifta here, his last words to his people, when he asked them to please, it was more than simply to do it with happiness, but it was what he asked them to sing. He said, I want you to sing the song. You sing it. Sing the song that in you our fathers have put their trust. Our forefathers, our fathers have put their trust in you to carry the Jewish people on your shoulders. Every one of us has to understand that responsibility and measure for ourselves. We all have the responsibility to carry that on, to be the leaders of our generation, to to know that whatever the bad times they chuck at us, we will come out on the other side. And if they do chuck at us bad times, it's down to us to rebuild. That's what he was saying to us. So we're going to go and have a l'chaim, and we'll sing the tzvei tzifah with the l'chaim. Okay, inside. We have a mashal l'chaim, 1 second. Okay, because
James, a couple of years ago,
we decided
that
should we just have a
just in case
of an emergency. So we're talking about, okay, of 18-year-old malt whiskey, okay, and we wanted everyone to really have a l'chaim. Okay, so we have a little l'chaim, everybody. Huh? Not all of you might drink it, but my master should be a l'chaim for each and every one of us. Yeah, we should know the messages, so we're going to have some cake and that, and then we'll eat them.
Okay, we'll eat them. So let's go into the CPR. Okay, over here. On this.
Okay. Yeah. Just as we make this l'chaim, it's incredibly amazing that this l'chaim is not just a l'chaim for the siyum, but we know that as Svi mentioned before, the Lublin Rav passes away at the age of 46. And it sounds like, just from the descriptions of his illness, that maybe he had, like, Svi attributed to the stress of his job, sounds like he had congestive heart failure, that his lungs kept filling up with water, with liquid, and he was unable to recover. And so the story's told, Lublin Rav is 46 years old. It's clear the medicines are not working, the physicians are not able to help anymore, and they tell his Rebbetzin, there's nothing else we could do. And you have to remember, the Lublin Rav didn't have children. He didn't have children. He and his Rebbetzin did not have children. They considered the Talmidim, the students of the yeshiva, to be their children. So he writes down to his wife that, I want to change my shirt. So a couple of Talmidim come in, they help him get cleaned up a little bit, they change his shirt, they straighten out his beard, and he says, take me out. I don't know to which room in the yeshiva. He says, take me out to the bedroom. He wants to be with the Talmidim. And he sees that his Rebbetzin is crying because she understands that this is the end.
And with,
she's buried next to the Pesach as well. So with just the last little bit of strength, he somehow gets out to his wife the words, do not cry, because this is where the simcha begins. Do not cry, because this is where the simcha begins. Lublin Rav was saying, we work our whole life to have a meaningful time in this world so that we could bask for all eternity, tachas kanfei ashchina, underneath the protection of the divine wings. He says, that's where I'm going now. Do not cry, do not be sad, for this is where the simcha begins. He orders the Talmidim to gather around, and he sees they're crying. They're crying, they're saying Tehillim. So the story, as it's told, is that Lublin Rav at this point in time can't speak, but he motions for a piece of paper, the pen, pencil, and he writes two words, Rak b'simcha, only with happiness. He tells them to pour l'chaim. They make a l'chaim to the Rav, to the Rashiva, to the Rebbe, and he orders them to sing that song, Becha Batcha Avoseinu. And he feels that they're singing it like without enough, what's the right word? Without enough koach, right? They're singing it half-heartedly. And he says, no, this has to be a simcha, rak b'simcha. And he kind of whips the Talmidim up into a frenzy. And they dance, and they dance, and they dance, and they sing, and they make l'chaims, and they bring out mizonos, and they're literally reaching the pinnacles, the height, the zenith of simcha, literally until the moment that the Lublin Rav's neshama leaves his body. Until one of the Talmidim says, the Rebbe is not with us, the Rebbe nishtu, the Rebbe is not here anymore. And at that point in time, they all tear kriya, they tear their clothing, and they begin to cry. The Lublin Rav's last words, his last tzavah to his Talmidim, was rak b'simcha, only in happiness. Now the Lublin Rav was a chassid. He was a chassid. And simcha and chasidus, you know, we have this concept. Rabbi Nachman perhaps is the most famous one of mitzvah gedola lios besimcha tamid. So I want to tell you, so sometimes we see this, like especially when you're in Eretz Yisrael and you stop at a red light and you know that if there's a big van plastered with Nachman stickers next to you, what's going to happen? Probably a couple of guys are going to jump out, start dancing and whatever. I don't know if that's what Rabbi Nachman had in mind. I'm not sure if that's what he meant. It's beautiful, it's good. But what did Rabbi Nachman mean when he said mitzvah gedola lios besimcha tamid? It's a mitzvah to always be besimcha. First of all, what does it mean? You can't always be besimcha. There are times when you're not supposed to be in a state of simcha, in a state of happiness. Tisha B'Av, it is prohibited to be in a state of simcha. Shiva, different times in Avelos, different times in the morning practice, we're not supposed to be besimcha. So Rabbi Nachman says something absolutely amazing. He says, what's simcha? He says, people make a mistake. People think simcha is a big smile across your face. People think simcha is when everything in life is going right. Rabbi Nachman says, you know what simcha is? Simcha is the emotional state that stems from knowing that you are living a life of meaning. When you know that your life is purposeful, when you know that your existence makes a difference, when you know that you're not just taking up space in this world, but you're on a shlichus. You see, people think that it's only Chabadniks who are on a shlichus. It's not true. Every Jew is on shlichus. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends me down to do something. And when I know that I'm doing something, when I know that I woke up in the morning and I got another day of life, and I'm going to use it, and I'm going to maximize it, and I'm going to change myself, and I'm going to change the world by changing myself, as he said yesterday, by changing myself, I'm going to change the world. Like Reb Chaim Brisker, the Divrei Chaim, and many others said, that's simcha. Mitzvah gedola lios besimcha tamid doesn't mean always have a smile on your face. Today, you can see the bumper stickers, the Bezlov bumper stickers are tein chiyuch tamid, right? Always smile. Rabbi Nachman didn't always smile. Rabbi Nachman had a difficult life. And that's not what Rabbi Nachman meant. It's good to smile also. But mitzvah gedola lios besimcha tamid means know that in every moment in your life you're purposeful. You should be able to look back at your day and say to yourself, you know what? I made a difference. I'm a little bit better today than I was yesterday, and therefore, by extension, the world is a little bit better. And those are the last words that the Lublina Rav said to his Talmidim. Rak b'simcha. There are dark, difficult days ahead, but always find a way to live a purposeful life, both in times of good and in times of challenge. In the zuchus of making a siyum here today, first of all, we give Hakaras HaTov to the neshama of the Lublina Rav, Rameir Shapira, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha, who continues to inspire so many to this very day. We make a L'chaim in the Zuchus of his neshama. And you know, Tzvi Haber pointed out to me.
We're not sure
about the dedication. It's not right.
It's wrong
day. Lag Ba'Omer. Okay, forget that. Tzvi gave me fake news on the way on the way here. All right, good. It was my fault. I'm sorry. We should hope that a merit of our siyum of the rikud of the simcha that we should internalize in ourselves the Lublina Rav's mantra of rak b'simcha, reach beyond ourselves, live meaningful lives, and in that merit, may we be privileged to give his halig neshama an aliyah, and may he enjoy lecht gan eden. L'chaim. Brachatah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shehakol Miyeh B'dvaro.
I like the comment about the
Chassidus. Shlichos. All on Shlichos.
I'll take it back that way.
All on Shlichos.
We're getting down there now.